So this week's parsha is Vayishlach. Begins with the story of Yaakov's fraught encounter, fearful encounter with his brother, and his preparations for that. And in the context of that encounter, there is this mysterious engagement with a nocturnal being at night who wrestles with him. And as a part of that story, the antagonist, shall we call him? Chazal say he was a Malach, Malach of Esav. The antagonist changed his name from Yaakov to Yisrael. Lo ye Amar, your name should not be called Yaakov any longer. Your name should be called Yisrael. And a little later on in the Parsha, Hashem himself affirms that name change with pretty much the same language. Instead of Yehomer, it says Yikare, but the same idea. Of course, the difference may be significant, but Hashem affirms the name change offered by that Malach. So that raises a number of questions. First of all, why did it need to be affirmed? Once might have been enough. Why the Malach and then Hashem himself? But what's really interesting is that Hashem changes his name, says he should be called not Yaakov but Yisrael, but later in the Parsha, let me find it if I can, Perek Membeis, let's read the Pasuk if I can get it, wait without taking too long. Perek Membeis, Pasuk. Perek Mem Vav, Pasuk Beis, Vayomer Elokim Li Yisrael B'maros HaLaila, and Hashem said to Yisrael in the vision of night, Vayomer, and he says, Yaakov, Yaakov. He says, Yaakov, Yaakov. Vayomer, and Yaakov responds to Hashem's calling him by saying, as soon as I can turn the page, Hineni. So here, Hashem himself calls him Yaakov. That's surprising. Hashem had renamed Yaakov Yisrael. So why does Hashem himself refer to Yaakov as Yisrael? And if I were to ask you, what's Yaakov's name? What would you answer? Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yisrael? Doesn't sound right. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So even though both the Malach and Hashem affirm a name change, Hashem himself doesn't follow the very name change that he affirmed. And in fact, throughout our Masorah, to this very day, we refer to him as Yaakov rather than Yisrael. So that, I think, requires explanation. Furthermore, now we'll be gone to the period of Chazal, to the Gemara. The Gemara in Brachos, Daf Yud Gimel, makes the following claim. We all know that Avram's name was changed to Avraham. It used to be Avram without the hay, and then it became Avraham. And the Torah's explanation is, Av Hamon Goyim Nesaticha, I made you a father to all the nations of the world, not merely to Av Aram. Avram would be Av Aram, the father of the nation of Aram, the Arameans. And Avraham means that he's the father not only to Aram, the citizens or the denizens of Aram, but he's the father to Hamon Goyim, to all the nations of the world. That's the reason for the name change. And the Gemara in Brachos says that if somebody calls Avraham Avraham, they are over on an Avera. Not allowed to do that. Once the name was changed, you're not allowed to call him Avram any longer. You can read the Parsha where his name before it was changed is Avram, but you can't refer to him as Avram, and that's not the case with Yaakov. Chazal no real record in Isser that we can't call Yaakov Yaakov. In fact, we do, and in fact, Hashem does. So what's the difference between Avram, Avraham, and Yaakov Yisrael? And if you think about it, the logic is the reverse. Avram is a fine name. Father of Aram. That's pretty impressive. If somebody called me the father of a nation, I would be pretty pleased. And then Avraham, okay, not just one nation, but many nations. Step up. Major step up, but the first name was not bad. But what is the meaning of Yaakov? Yaakov derives from, the Torah itself says, why did Yaakov get the name Yaakov? Because Yado Achezes Ba'akev Esav. He was sort of holding on to the heel of Esav. And that is not exactly a noble image of this like young little fetus holding on to the heel of his brother. And Rashi, in Perek Lamed Hey, Brachos of Bereshis, Pasuk Yud says, Lo Yikare Shimcha Od Yaakov. Here Hashem is affirming the name change. Rashi says, What's with Yaakov? Lashan Adam Habab in Ma'arav Va'akeva. It connotes a person who comes with lying in wait, with trickery, with deceit. Whereas Yisrael is Sar, Lashan Sar V'Nogid, implies a prince. So the name Yaakov has an ignominious quality to it. Deceit, subterfuge, ambush, Ma'arav's ambush. It's not the most elevated of names. And that's Rashi's explanation for why the name was changed. No longer that ignominious name, Yaakov. No, 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 it's Yisrael. You are a tsar. You are a leader. Well, if that's the case, wouldn't you think it makes more sense to forbid calling Yaakov Yaakov than to forbid calling Avraham Avram? Avraham is not bad. It's not so bad if you call him that. Why? And yet, nevertheless, that's forbidden, according to the Gemara in Brachos. Nevertheless, on the other hand, while Yaakov is a negative name, not only is it permissible to call him that, Hashem does, and we do. So the whole issue of names here is quite puzzling. I came across a drasha that Rav Kook delivered, which is recorded in a sefer called Midbar Shor, which is a collection of drushas that he delivered early in his career when he was still a Rav in Boisk before he moved to Israel. And in that drasha, published some years ago, this book, sefer, he addresses these issues. I'd like to share with you his explanation and then, using his framework, offer a version or an explanation of my own. So what does Rav Kook say? Rav Kook, and by the way, although this was an early drasha, it really encapsulates many of the great themes that Rav Kook returned to again and again in his voluminous writings. So Rav Kook maintains, central thesis really is in a way paradoxical, but it's crucial. And I think very, very true, personal. He says that the Jewish task in history is to change the world, as we say in Tfilas Aleinu, L'sakein Olam B'malchus Shaddai. Our responsibility is to fix the world in the sovereignty of Hashem, L'sakein Olam, to make the world a better place. As the Pasuk in Yeshayahu says, we are to be an Or L'Goyim, a light into the people. So to narrowly construe our task, our mission, our set of goals in the world as focused exclusively on ourselves as Jews would be to fundamentally misconceive what it is to be a Jew in the world. Our task is to change the world and make the world overall a far better place. To limit our mission is to traduce our mission. It's to be not faithful to the grand conception that Hashem had for us in the world. We are his emissaries in the world, his agents in the world, to make the overall world, all the nations of the world, a better place. That's what it means to be an Am Segula. The paradox, however, is that the only way to achieve this universalistic mission, to make the overworld world a morally better, spiritually better, theologically better place, is if we retain our particularity. If we assimilate into the world at large in order to change the world, then we lose our own moral convictions that make us distinctive. We lose our spirituality that is distinctively ours. We lose our focus on Hashem that is distinctively ours. And we eventually become just like them. Well, how can we make the world a better place if we are so much a part of our world that we lost who we are? We lost our identity as Jews. And so paradoxically, the only way to achieve our universal mission, l'saken olam, l'malchus shakai, the only way to achieve that is to be amal levadad yishkon, to be segregated and separate from the world and retain our distinctiveness and our identity and not assimilate into the larger discourse, values, ways of living in the world. So there's a kind of a balance here that needs to be struck, a balance between retaining our particularity, by virtue of which, and only by virtue of which, can we in fact make a difference in the world at large. And that's a challenge, and we'll see how Rav Kook parses it historically. But let's first get back to Avram. Avram's original name was Av-Aram, the father of the people of Aram. That's not universalistic. That's father of particular people. To once Hashem changed his name to Avraham as Av-Hamon Goyim, then to advert back to that narrow conception of Avram's mission in the world would be to violate what Hashem wants Jews to do, which is to make the world a better place, morally, spiritually, in every way. So to say, oh no, you're not Avraham Hamon Goyim, Av Hamon Goyim, you are merely Avram Av Aram, is to violate the very universal mission that Hashem has set for the Jews as his emissaries on the world, to be his link to the betterment and transformation of the world around us. Therefore, it's usher, the Gemara says in Brachas, to call Avraham Avram, because that is to subvert the core mission of the Jewish people, for which reason Hashem created and chose us as an Am Sekula. That's the case of Avram and Avraham. However, the change of the name from Yaakov to Yisrael reflects a different process, because the name Yaakov, as Rav Kook interprets it, represents a different, not narrower, but different mode of being in the world than Yisrael. Avram, Avraham, one is broader, one is narrower. Can't go to the narrow from the broad. That's not the case with Yaakov and Yisrael, and the change to Yisrael. Let's think for a moment, and we've discussed this recently in the past, how it is, why it was that Yitzchak chose Esav, or preferred Esav for the brachas, over Yaakov. That's one of the great puzzles. I discussed it a couple of weeks ago. Rav Kook's reading, which is not really so different, terribly different from the reading that I offered, is that Yitzchak was committed, not surprisingly, being the special son of Avraham, to the universal mission of Avraham, to the Avraham, Avhamon Goyim mission of Avraham. That was Yitzchak's commitment as the son of Avraham, to carry forward that Mesorah, that tradition. Now, from Yitzchak's perspective, who was better suited to make a difference in the world? Yaakov Ish Tam Yosef Olam, this naive or simple, homebodied son who didn't go out, hung out in his mother's tent, Maybe he was learning, and he was obviously a great tzaddik, Yaakov Avinu, but he was not. Wasn't out there in the world. How could he make a difference out there in the world if he wasn't out there in the world, if he was Ishtam Yoshev Ohal? Yitzchak, out of a commitment to his father's great mission, preferred Esav because Esav was an Ish Sadeh. He was out there. He was in the world. Well, who better suited to change the world than somebody who was out there in the world, unlike, alternatively, Yaakov, who was not out there in the world and therefore would be ill-suited to carrying forward Avram's great mission of making the world a better place. And so therefore, Avram's missionary ideal, which was the mission of the Jewish people, the Sakein Olam Malchus Shakai of Hamon Goyim, could not have been carried out in Yitzchak's judgment effectively with Yaakov, which is why he preferred Esav. Now, there was obviously a misreading on Yitzchak's part of Esav's true metal, and Esav was too materialistic, a bit too sensual, maybe too aggressive to be an effective vehicle for that great mission of making the world a better place. And so, by subterfuge and deception, Yaakov got the brachos. Yitzchak affirmed that Yaakov should have gotten the brachos, and the universal mission of making the world a better place fell to Yaakov, Ishtam Yoshev Olam, rather than to Esav. But, and here's the rub, when would Yaakov be most effective, or effective at all, in carrying forward that mission? Not when he was Yaakov, only when he became Yisrael. Only when he became Yisrael. Bi'acharis hayamim. At the end of time, and we're learning about Mashiach. At the end of time, the Jews will eventually become Yisraelim. We will eventually achieve the princeliness, the dignity, the respect, the aristocratic spirituality that would make it possible for us to shape the world according to Hashem's will. But stuck as we are in the pre-redeemed world, there we need to be Yaakov. In other words, and here's how Rav Kook distinctively interprets it, Yodo ocheses ba'akev Esav. Right? His hand was holding the heel of Esav. Rav Kook envisions the heel of Esav as the powerful, trampling feet of a dominant culture. The feet of Esav, meaning the power of Esav as a dominant culture in society. In the United States, we are, in Rav Kook's way of metaphors, we are in the world of Esavs. And by the way, we never feel this more than during the month of December, in the very beginning of January, when we truly feel ourselves in an alien world, in the holiday season, the holiday spirit. And we really feel, oh, this is Esav. This is not us here in New York. We're really Yaakovs. We're not, you know, Esav is the powerful, dominant cultural and political force in the world. And how do we get a grip on Esav? How do we resist the assimilatory pressures that the dominant culture places on a Jewish minority? The legs, the powerful legs, the powerful cultural and political forces that press upon Jews and make us desire to become a part of the dominant force. How do we resist that? By Yodo. Yodo ochezes ba'akev Esav. The hand. And the hand, Rav Kook interprets to mean the hand that performs mitzvos. The hand that performs, by holding on to the mitzvos, by being dictuk with mitzvahs, by being careful with halacha, by making sure that we keep Shabbos with meticulous care, by making sure that we daven, that we learn, that we do all the things we do with our hands, the tactile, physical involvement that Jews have with the life of Torah and mitzvahs, that's what keeps our national integrity intact, despite the powerful cultural assimilatory forces around us. It's yado. There's the legs of Esav, which denote for Rav Kook powerful cultural forces, and it's the yad, yadayim, the yad of Yaakov, which retains our particularity, and it's that which is necessary to achieve the universal goal, which will eventually happen. If we can't hang on as identified, committed from Jews, there will never be a Yisrael. There will never come a time, B'Yachros HaYamim, Rav Kook argues, that we will be able to make the world a better place. It's only if we preserve our identity, our frumkeit, our commitment to halacha, that we will eventually retain our connection to Hashem, which will enable us to be Yisrael, Av Hamon Goyim, to change the world at large. And so the Yaakov model of extreme care and punctiliousness in keeping halacha, we all know Achad Am, who is not really a from Jew, famously said, it's not so much the Jews keep Shabbos, as everybody knows, Shabbos keeps the Jews. And that's brilliantly true. And that's what Rav Kook is saying in his own way. It's that kiyum ha-mitzvos is what keeps us going. And if you look at the difference between Jews who keep mitzvos and Jews who don't keep mitzvos, where does Jewish continuity and eternity lie? It lies in the Jews who are committed to halacha. The Jews who are not committed to halacha are unfortunately intermarry, assimilate at high numbers, obviously not everybody, but many. And the future of Jewish life depends upon those of us who care about Torah and mitzvahs because of the powerful forces of the legs of Esau. So there's a lot of truth to what he's saying. And again, I think this is a particularly important message this time of the year, in this season that we are currently living through. Now, we will always keep mitzvos, obviously, B'Achros HaYamim, even when we achieve the status of Yisrael, when we're not denigrated, when we're not a minority, when we're not looked down upon or downtrodden, as we have been throughout so many of our years, millennia in Gaulis, when we achieve a certain degree of national confidence and accomplishments, which in Israel is progressing, Baruch Hashem. Whether the Kiyum HaMitzvahs is progressing in Israel is another question. Certainly amongst many segments of society it is, but far from all segments of society. But let's imagine that Israel were a completely religious, halachically observant state. Then that morally, and then remember, halacha embraces not only halachos ben Adam, and Hashem, and Shemayim, and Adam Lamakom, but also about Adam Lachavera. So if we keep all of the mitzvos, not only about Adam Lamakom, but about Adam Lachavera, we as a people can exemplify and model the kind of life that all human beings should live. That's Yisrael. That's the way in which a Yisrael can change the world. But the way in which Yisrael keeps mitzvos is different from the way in which Yaakov keeps mitzvos. Yaakov keeps mitzvos kind of just, you know, in Golas, just holding on and making sure we're careful so that we can survive. But when we flourish B'Achros HaYamim and we as Yisrael keep mitzvos, we still need to keep mitzvos, but it becomes more spiritualized. It's more internalized. There's an aura, a radiance that comes from a full Jewish people that expresses their commitment to Hashem. So what Rav Kook says is that even after we Jews get the name Yisrael, and even after we achieve the status of Yisrael, this internalized aristocratic spirituality, which can model spirituality and morality for the entire universe. Even then, there still needs to be a Yaakov. We still need to be careful in the mitzvos. Of course, they play a somewhat different role. And that's why even after Hashem gave Yaakov the name Yisrael, Rav Kook says, he can still call him Yaakov, even when he's a Yisrael, because even when we achieve this elevated status of Yisrael, there still needs to be this grasping and holding on to mitzvos, even if in a more spiritual, aristocratic, radiant kind of way. So the name change had to be affirmed twice, because it is not only a Malach, but Hashem who affirms that, and the name Yaakov endures, even after the name Yisrael, unlike the name change of Avram to Avram. Thus Rav Kook. And I think that's a lovely reading. A drasha, but a lovely drasha. I'd like to now conclude with a somewhat different reading of my own, but one which employs Rav Kook's overall framework. Very different, but nevertheless using the same framework. By that I mean, another way to understand the transition from Yaakov to Yisrael is not, as Rav Kook has it, from one kind of kiyum ha-mitzvos, more tactile and physical, to a more spiritualized keeping of the mitzvos physically, a different role in the entire universe. That's Rav Kook. I would like to suggest that there's another way of thinking about the transition between Yaakov and Yisrael, and I would say it's more faithful to what Rashi says. But remember, I read you the Rashi. Yaakov connotes subterfuge and deceit, whereas Yisrael connotes the prince, princeliness, mastery, sovereignty, dignity. And if you take that, then I would suggest that there are two ways. Let's speak about it this in the national arena. There are two ways that a country can achieve its goals. Number one, by brute force. And number two, by cunning. Let's take the State of Israel, for example. The State of Israel employs a very powerful army, Baruch Hashem. Hashem has, with Siyata Dishmaya, enabled the State of Israel to flourish and grow. But as powerful as Israel's army is, nevertheless, they are surrounded by many, many, many other armies and a terrible enemy in Iran. Now, how do you tackle Iran? Do you tackle Iran by bombing it to smithereens? That's the Yisrael method, the princely, powerful method of controlling your enemy. Well, that's not what Israel did, if Israel was responsible, this past week for the assassination of Iran's chief nuclear scientist. I would not call that an example of brute force. I'd have to say that was an example of cunning, as was the way in which Israel swiped the whole massive archives of the Iranian nuclear program. Like, that's cunning. It's not brute force. And in an ideal world, we wouldn't need to resort to cunning, because we would be Yisrael. We would have the power, the authority, the respect, the dignity to enable the nations of the world to respect what it is that we wish in our autonomy, and our goals, and our beliefs. But in an unredeemed world, sometimes you need to use some Jewish cleverness, if I can use that expression, to achieve your goals. And that is how Jews survived for millennia in the Gola. We didn't have an army. Baruch Hashem, Israel has an army. But up until the founding of the State of Israel, we didn't have an army. And when you think back to the War of Independence, you remember the Davidka? You remember the story with the Davidka? You know, they made this massive noise. It was a totally ineffectual weapon. But the Israelis, people fighting in the 48 war, knew that the noise that it made was so fearsome that it scared them all. That's not brute force, that's cunning. The state of Israel was founded with cunning, and it's a gift that Hashem has given us. We shouldn't brag about it. Hashem has given us that gift, and guess who it goes back to? Yaakov. Goes back to Yaakov. To some extent to Avram and Yitzchak with the Avimelech and their wives, but particularly with Yaakov, with the Bracha and the Bechora, Esav, the powerful one. Yaakov, using cunning, gets the Bracha, gets the Bechora, whether, you know, Ramban is critical of the Ramban, is, as our others, critical of Yaakov, but whatever it is, it's through cunning, cleverness, that he achieved certain crucial goals that made Jewish life possible. And during the Holocaust, we didn't have an army to defend us, and there were other armies that could have defended us and bombed some train routes that could have saved the lives of hundreds of thousands of Jews. That didn't happen. But insofar as Jews did survive, they survived through siyata d'shmaya always, but through cleverness, tricks, you know, disguises and this and that and the other thing. That's been a secret of Jewish survival throughout our years, millennia of persecution, being a minority country. We had to rely on our wits. Because without our wits, we couldn't have survived. And that goes back really a gift of Yaakov. Now, on the one hand, we should take pride in that because it enabled us to survive. On the other hand, it would be great if we can graduate from that and achieve our goals through the status purely of Yisrael. But that hasn't happened yet. And my suggested reading of the name change from Yaakov to Yisrael is that there will eventually be an evolution from the cunning of a minority of Jews who are a minority like Yaakov in the powerful environment of Esav, who is a much more powerful figure. And we use our cunning to survive over the millennia of Gullus. And even when we found the state of Israel, which is not redemption, unfortunately yet, we daven it is, but we're not quite there yet. Mashiach hasn't come yet. We know we're learning Perikah Chelek. He is not there yet. We kakalo b'chol yom shiyova, but he's not there yet. So even with the state of Israel, we still need cunning desperately. Can't rely on brute force. And even eventually be Yisrael, when we eventually achieve that status of Yisrael, it's a really big world out there. And sometimes we may still need those gifts of Yaakov, that cunning of Yaakov. It is the Jewish destiny to be Am Levadad Yishkon, to live on our own, to be our own kind of people. And when you're Am Levadad Yishkon, even if you are Yisrael, that is an Am Levadad Yishkon. Even if you are respected, and even if you have this aristocratic aura and power, you're still different from other nations. And Jews will probably always need, even in the status of Yisrael, which we are not there yet, although we daven we are approaching. But even in that status, the name Yaakov will remain with us. We always need to retain the cleverness and the cunning that enables us to survive throughout Gola, throughout exile, and will enable us to flourish even after exile ends. Even after Ba'achris HaYamim, we achieve the fullest measure of Yisrael. Always need to have that Yaakov. So that's my reading, using Rav Kook's framework, but my reading of the Yaakov-Yisrael change. That's not true of Avraham, a totally different change. It's reflecting different set of concerns. I think this week demonstrated to my mind the truth of the importance of retaining that capacity for cleverness, and we can only daven to Hashem, and this is a tefillah, that Hashem continue to enable Jews to survive and to flourish using the cleverness that Hashem has gifted us, going back to Yaakov Avinu, and to withstand the challenges that Israel and all of us face, and that we achieve the status of Yisrael, the Mehera v'Yomeinu, but that we always remember to